This is Herb Schellenberger, programmer of Bear Film and Media Arts Festival, and we're really happy to speak with Sky Hopinka today. Very proud to show his film, Mosny, Towards the Ocean, Towards the Shore. You've shown your work in Barrick a number of times before. Really excited to have your newest film. You've been prolific as an artist filmmaker working in short form moving image. How did you conceive of this film? And I'm also wondering, even before production, what was the preparation of the film like in relation to how you would approach a short film?
Well, I've been wanting to do a longer film for a number of years now, but just could never really figure out what that looked like or figure out a project that made sense for a longer form. And when I had started thinking more about like reincarnation, especially around like my tribe's beliefs around it, and that appeared in another short film of mine called I'll Remember You As You Were, Not As What You Become. So it was, I guess, a line of thinking that really, I don't know, I could connect to different communities that I've been a part of and worked with. I've done like three films that include Chinook Wawa, the language to the Pacific Northwest, the language that I speak. And when I was looking through the dictionary one day, like in the back of the dictionary, there's those, these different like texts like that are transcriptions of the fluent speakers that the linguists had talked to over the years, all the way from like the 1920s and 30s up until like the 80s. And one of the stories that was in there was the origin of death myth. And I just thought it was like really beautiful and just, I don't know, just like conceptualized reincarnation and death and like the idea of like death having a beginning or something that was established or had to be established was just a beautiful way to think about reincarnation outside of my own tribe's beliefs. And so like that just kind of started me on this sort of like path of thinking about the film as being about that. I'd also known that I wanted to make a feature-length film in Chinook Wawa. And so it seemed to line up with all these different sort of ideas that had been swirling around in my head. As far as like the production and preparing for it, I knew I didn't really want to try and like learn a different style of filmmaking or just like having a big budget or having a crew or having like, you know, all these different things that like I never do or work with. Like, you know, I mean, I shoot and I edit and I do the sound on my own for most all of my films. With this one, a friend of mine helped me like with the sound recording on the canoe journey shoots, and Thad Kjellstad, he did the soundtrack for the film, which was really nice for me to start piecing all these segments together. And really what I wanted to do is just scale up or see how my short filmmaking practice scaled up into something longer.
Yeah. That's a really good way of putting it, because, you know, I see definitely a continuity in terms of the themes and subjects of your previous films, but I do find Mothni somewhat of a departure in terms of the form. You know, we see you out in the world with Sweetwater and Jordan in conversation or traveling to these different locations, kind of just spending a lot of time together. And there's less of a focus on kind of the visual textures or image collages that we see in your other films. So I'm interested to know if this was a conscious choice during production or if you found this more in the editing, you know, this sort of, let's call it like a for lack of a better term, a simpler style, you know?
It was something I thought a lot about, especially while making it and shooting. Like most of those abstractions that I tend to employ in the short film, like happen either, I don't know, in camera, like with a shutter speed or just like with filters, or in post-production and just like playing around with images and seeing how they stack and seeing how they interact with one another. So while shooting, you know, I just, if something made sense to slow down the shutter speed or whatever, then I would do it. And really the thing that I tend to do is like kind of oscillate back and forth between these different sort of techniques or approaches to the image through these different short projects where like I made a film called Dislocation Blues, and like that was a pretty straightforward film formally. There wasn't a lot of manipulations digitally or abstractly. And then right after that, I made another short film called Fainting Spells, which was like heavy in abstraction and also like heavy in like the soundtrack, or like there weren't a lot of voices. And usually when there are people on the screen or people that I'm shooting, I tend to not want to do too much abstraction just because I'm not quite sure how I feel about it. Mm-hmm. And so with this film, I felt like it would have been a challenge, or was a challenge for me, or just to lean into the impulse to not abstract the image and just to keep the cuts as straight as I could, or just to do what I could within the image as I shot it, whether it was like the saturation of the color or even just being an opportunity to play with the soundtrack more or the soundscape more, in order to employ the same sort of effects or affect that I was hoping or kind of hope to accomplish or achieve with visual manipulations.
And you've also produced a lot of amazing writing and text. I noticed that your second book is due to be published soon, and your films have kind of all included writing, text, different forms of narration or language. It might be a little bit less obvious in Mothmi, but I was wondering how you feel that writing or language and how they're represented in the film and what kind of bearing dialogue or conversation has in that.
Like with the writing elements, I mean, even just like coming up with the dialogue in Chinook that I read or I say as a narrator, it's just like it was hard thinking about how do I write this. I don't know, I didn't really want to like write in Chinook and then, you know, speak it. And then I didn't want to write something in English and then translate it into Chinook. So what I ended up doing was just like watching the cut and then just like with a microphone, just like kind of talking over it and just like seeing whatever made sense. And so these different parts of language approaches, I think they're all like tied together, especially with like the writing and especially with the writing that appears in films or the writing that I do for films that then appears in like these different texts. I don't like feel too much of a distinction between them or how they interact with one another. I think they're all trying to approach like whether it is a concept or whether it is like some sort of singular idea in a different way, in a circular sort of way, and trying to suss out what these different things are, these different issues are that I feel compelled to write about or speak about or make films about. And so that feels complementary.
I've always really admired your work because you're able to really eloquently relate what you've written on your website as personal positions of Indigenous homeland and landscape. I use the word relate because I think that's different than explaining. So you've, you know, related this positioning in some of your films. It's a first person kind of embodied position. But with Mothmi, there's this quite sustained relation of two other people's positioning over a longer duration of time. So I wonder, what was that like? Was it daunting? Was it exciting? And how does your relationship with both of these people play into relating, you know, their positioning? Yeah.
I don't think I realized how daunting it was or would be until like, I don't know, like a month or two into editing and just trying to figure out like, you know, like how to balance these different stories and like how to make them communicate with one another and how to like weave them together and how also to just like respect them as people and as individuals to kind of understand like the limitations of like what I could shoot or also like, I don't know, the places that I could go, whether it's like understanding them personally or just like figuring out what it is that I want to express with the film. And for me, it was like a lot of it was just like this friendship between the two of them. Like I've known Sweetwater since 2006 and I've known Jordan since 2011. And so like these are friends of mine and people that like are consistently in my life. And what is the thing that I want to convey like that also like holds me accountable as the filmmaker and also like as the person that is presenting them. Or, you know, with the camera and the authority behind that. And so it became about our friendships or just like figuring out like where our friendships exist in these different landscapes, as well as the things that we talk about and the things that we don't talk about. There's a lot of different things that kind of happened over the course of shooting, like, you know, the canoe journey and then like Jordan and his wife, Amanda, they were like expecting their son, Vincent, and then Sweetwater got pregnant, and these are all just things that happened during the course of the filming, and it's just how then like they represent where each of them are at in life, but then also how that relates to just the overall theme of life and death. I mean, even too, just like, you know, not wanting to essentialize Sweetwater, you know, as a woman that has a child, that isn't what should define her, or even trying to resist the binary that is presented in the film between like a man and a woman, mm-hmm. and trying to figure out like, you know, is this a limitation of the film or just a limitation of, like, you know, what I can see? And but then how to just, like, reconcile that or just think about, you know, what the opportunities are for them to be a conversation or dialogue, how to non-essentialize either of them, either as Indigenous people based on, like, their phenotype and how they look and the color of their skin, or as, like, the identities that they hold for themselves. So, like, these are all the different things that I was thinking about, especially while editing it, especially while shooting it, and just trying to give both of them space and opportunity to speak and to, I don't know, relate what it means to be a friend to them, and also what it means to be navigating life and death, as well as living on that landscape that they do, that is the Pacific Northwest, that is the ocean, you know, that is the forest.
I really appreciate how you do weave their two stories and your two, you know, separate, distinctive relationships together. In a way, focusing on two different people isn't something that I feel like I've seen in a lot of films. You know, there can be films that focus on one person or on a number of people, but it just struck me that this kind of sustained, dual but, like, heterogeneous kind of depiction was sort of unique. When did you arrive to that, you know, structure?
I think it was when I was doing some, like, test shooting in Oregon, and, like, Sweetwater was working as, like, a flight attendant at the time, and so I was, like, passing through Oregon, and she happened to be in town, and so, like, for the weekend, and so we decided to hang out, and I was doing some tests with, like, the camera that I had, and, like, some the SETI camera, not SETI cam, like, the gimbals. And so we just, like, you know, drove out to the forest and, like, walked around, and, you know, she just appeared at some shot because I wanted her to try some follow stuff. And I was just like, oh, yeah, you know, Sweetwater was also in a film that I made a few years before called Anti-Objects. It was about Chinookwawa in Portland. So it just, it made sense to have her in this as well. I don't know, it just kind of, like, grew from there. And then just thinking about, because, like, Jordan was someone I've been talking to from the start about being in the film. Because she was in my first and only narrative short film called Hui Hui, which was entirely in Chinookwawa. And so making Chinookwawa films is something that we have been talking about. So with the two of them, I began thinking about how, like, they both, you know, occupy these different landscapes and different places and just spending time with them. And then another element that I was hoping would have more of a presence in the film, but I think it's just more, like, sort of in the background, is that of the meteor, Timonous, and just, like, how that functions. But then also, how do I function as a narrator, as another character, or an in-between? And then just constructing it and trying to weave these different sections together and, like, where they are in these different landscapes. Kind of like establishing from the beginning that, like, I don't think I ever wanted them to meet, you know, or, like, have, like, a meeting between them be a sort of, like, you know, endpoint or just, like, a resolution or part of, like, the thing that would be expected. Because, like, yeah, because, like, I think it just, like, that would tend to lead or just, like, kind of rely too much on a more traditional sort of storytelling format with, like, two characters and do they ever meet, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know, I just, like, wanted to give them both of their own space within the film and to also make them independent of each other. And I don't know, like, whatever that does for their own agency as people that are represented in a film, it felt like that was something that just made sense from the get-go.
Yeah, that's, like, really well put. A difficult question. I'm wondering what the reception has been like thus far of the film, but also how it's been exhibited and what are you hoping about the future of the film? It's a really difficult time to be making and exhibiting films.
It's been hard. I feel fortunate that it had a chance to play at, like, three festivals before the lockdown happened, and it premiered at Sundance in the New Frontier program, and, you know, Jordan had a chance to come to that with Amanda, his wife. Sweetwater couldn't make it because she had her daughter 3 weeks before. There was also, like, a representative from the Grand Ronde tribe, like, Confederate tribes of Grand Ronde, that got to go to the screening at Sundance as well, so that was, like, really nice. But I don't know. We had, like, all the best plans, you know, to show it in Oregon, show it for the community. And since then, it's just been a series of online screenings, which I think I'm still trying to figure out how I feel about everything. I mean, one, just, like, the hope that, you know, to see a film on a big screen, you know, is, like, it's just something that really can't be replicated, you know.
Definitely.
And
yeah.
But it's also good too that, you know, like people that have reached out to me that, you know, maybe wouldn't have had a chance to attend certain film festivals had a chance to see the film. And so that's important to me as well. It just, yeah, I feel like so many different things every single day, but overall, like, I'm thankful that the film is getting out there and people are watching it and getting a chance to experience it in whatever way they can. I hope that someday it'll screen it in a cinema.
Well, I very much hope that too, because I would like to watch it there myself. Definitely. Finally, I'm just personally interested as well to hear about anything you might have coming next in terms of writing or exhibitions or films or.
Yeah. Coming the soonest, I have it's a chapbook sort of thing coming out in the next month or two with this text that I've been working on for the last few years called Perfidia. I think it's something that's guiding or, I don't know, preceding what I'm thinking about future projects look like, especially dealing with the idea of, I don't know, like a more personal relationship to what it likes or what it means to be in this country, the United States. And also being Indigenous and understanding these different traumas and historical traumas in ways that I feel like a lot of my work is about, but just kind of, I don't know, offers an indirect way into the context that the things I'm responding to through my work. Like one of the points of like Perfidia texts is just looking at, I don't know, like wondering, like, you know, if the colonizing countries, whether it's like the UK, Spain, France, Portugal, like they still think about us, you know, like what sort of relationship do European empires have with present day the United States or Canada, you know, and like what sort of ways is like the indigenous sort of like past and history and trauma and genocide, you know, affects Europeans, you know. It's like kind of like framed as a breakup, you know. It's like, do you still think about me, you know? And like, you know, what sort of ways do we have in connecting our presence and how we exist and how we view ourselves, or even just like how I exist and how I view myself and all these different weights and burdens carry, and like how, what does reconciliation look like, not only like between these different nations but also interpersonally, and what sort of conversations can be had. And how does acknowledging it just to begin that conversation and healing?
The last point reminded me that I should probably ask you before we sign off to speak to the listeners a bit about Cousin and about the conversations that are coming out of that, and you know, what the collective is.
Yeah, so. A few years ago, some friends and I started talking about making a collective that necessarily wasn't about like making work, but just about building a community and supporting indigenous experimental films or art or whatever, because that's like often a gap in terms of funding and support in the US and in Canada. Indigenous experimental media often falls between the cracks, you know, because it's like not more like, you know, mainstream, you know, filmmaking, and it's also like not entirely in the art world. There's a gap of support here, and especially for Indigenous work, and so we really wanted to find a way to support artists and to platform artists and to give a space that builds a conversation around what Indigenous experimental film looks like. I mean, because like both of those terms are also very broad and very open, Indigenous and experimental, you know. They can be limiting, but they also can be expansive. And so just like as a sort of flag to fly, you know, we started this collective. It's me, Alex Lazarowicz, Adam Peron, and Adam Khalil. And this past summer, we got through our first round of people that we were able to support financially. And that's like 10 filmmakers, not only from the US, but also from Canada and from South America and from Mexico. And just trying to like really expand on this idea of what Indigenous means, and just to support them, the projects they want to make. We're really looking forward to the work that they'll produce, as well as just like how we can help them in their trajectory and with whatever they need. And also just trying to figure out what comes next and what are the conversations we can have in this collective form, building community and building conversations and building dialogues and platforms, and just like giving space for the artists to make the work that they want to make.
That's really great. So we'll all look out for more of what's coming from Cousin. And I guess I just wanted to say also to wrap up, we don't just select the new films by filmmakers that we've shown before to show in our festival. You know, we really loved Mothni. For myself, I have been hugely in awe of your filmmaking, and I wasn't exactly sure what to expect. And Mothni delivered something that was different than what I was imagining, but really just as strong and powerful. So we're really excited that we're able to show it in this year's festival. And thank you for the conversation, Sky.
Thank you so much. It's really great to show at the festival again. Yeah.